Once more into the breach, dear friend.
Else fill the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure on this Saturday, August the 2th of the year of our Lord, 2014, or 2014, whatever. And the telephone number is in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Chris in Georgetown.
Hello.
Hey,
Chris von Georgetown. See, another member of the nobility.
Via Memphis, Tennessee. So
oh.
I'm actually on vacation calling you guys.
So German and Italian. So you've got Via and Von.
Well, Memphis is Via Von. Egyptian.
That's true.
So you really get around, guy.
And it's on the river, too.
Okay. Yes.
I was calling you guys because I listened to your show, I think it was 2 weeks ago, and you talked about a couple of books.
I'm sorry. Sorry, I just have to apologize right away for having to listen to us.
No. I did talk about 3 books, to be exact. Yes, last week.
Last week or the week before?
Last week.
I think last week. Okay, last week. Structure and Change and Economic History. What were the other books? I didn't hear what they were.
The second one I talked about was Generations, the History of America's Future.
By Strauss and Howe.
No, well, wait a minute. The History of America's Future, 1584 to 2069. So after 2069, it's not valid.
Yeah, we don't know what's going on after that. Yeah.
And that was by Strauss and Howe, William Strauss and something Howe. And the third one, which I didn't get to talk about very much, and I'd like to some other time, is The Great Wave, Price, and I always get this a little wrong, Price Revolutions or Price Revolutions in the Flow of History or something like that. But it's The Great Wave, and it's by David Hackett Fisher.
Price Revolutions and the Rhythm of History.
Revolutions and the Rhythm of History.
I would throw a couple more on there.
You would?
Yeah. You didn't talk about them last week. I wasn't here last week, so I didn't talk about them either. But
where were you if you weren't here?
I was here there in Alpine, Texas.
I said that's where you were, but if I'd ask you where you were, you would say you were here.
Yeah, I would have.
Okay. Anyway, what are the books that you would recommend?
I would begin with Nudge, which is Richard Thaler's book, and it's on behavioral economics. And I would take that a step further after, if you enjoyed Nudge, then I would take a further step into something. But seeing as you're at the upper level books with those three, you may even just want to start at Thinking Fast and Slow.
Yeah. Well,
by Daniel Kahneman.
The 3 books that I have recommended are all books written by people in the 20th century, and they forecast, and generally they're written in the 70s and 80s. Sometimes they were published later, but they're written in the 70s and 80s. And they were published, and they have stood the test of time. And when I see something that was written 20 or 30 years ago, and it describes what's going on in the world today with the degree of accuracy that those 3 books have achieved, I probably want to read what they are saying will happen next, because, again, the standard for a prophet in the Old Testament and the standard for a prophet in economics are exactly the same. If a person accurately predicts over a multi-decade period what is going to happen in advance, and you have to be very careful because people will pretend like they predicted something when they're actually talking about they wrote it much later, and they're pretending to predict the past, which is not that hard.
I can predict the past. Pretty good at it, actually.
But these books were all written 20 to 30 years ago or more, and they describe what's going on in the world today when you read them with such accuracy, it's almost frightening.
I have a
and
prediction.
So the important thing is to read on beyond today, what they say is going to happen next. And it's a little bit unsettling, to say the least, which is why the books are not overly popular at this point. First off, they're not the newest whiz-bang thing, but they do very, very, very well describe what has happened so far. And in my opinion, we ought to pay attention to those writers when they say what's probably going to happen in the future. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, I have a prediction.
What did you say, Nudge? Who did Nudge? Who wrote Nudge?
Richard Thaler. He's a professor, he's a head of the economics department at Chicago University, which is the leading economics school out there with Wharton, my opinion, of course.
It's in Thaler?
Thaler. Richard Thaler. Thaler. But Thinking Fast and Slow is Daniel Kahneman, and that one is, well, he won the Nobel Prize on that particular set of study that he put into the book.
Mm-hmm. And Thinking Fast and Slow is a superb exercise in how irrational we are.
Yeah. So if you take...
and we are very irrational.
If you take the books that Old Baldy here was talking about and you add them to the behavioral side of things, you have a picture of the world that is pretty amazingly accurate. We tend to make the same mistakes repeatedly unless we're aware that we're making the mistakes. As soon as we make, and this is, you know, I ask this often, Chris, this is a great example. How does it feel to be wrong?
Yeah, it feels bad.
Well, it was a trick question, and I've just made you wrong on the air, because the reality is that you wouldn't have made the decision if you knew it was wrong, right?
Right, right.
So until you knew it was wrong, being wrong felt the same as being right. And that's what we go about our lives doing.
Actually, for a lot of people, being wrong feels so good. They do it repeatedly. Repeatedly.
And this is even people that know it's wrong. Even people that know it's wrong.
For instance, and I'm going to give you, and I'm only saying this to irritate Lynn Willey if he's listening. Glenn Beck advocated that, A, the currency was going to collapse, and, B, you should buy gold. And this was in 2009, 2010, and then in 2011, even Rupert Murdoch couldn't put up with him and fired him.
So since then, gold has collapsed and the currency has strengthened.
Yes, and yet people still contact us. I was just listening to Glenn Beck, and said, you know, the point is that it was the same people who contacted us in some cases in 2009 who were just as scared by him at the time, and they went out and bought gold in some cases. The point I'm going to make is we enjoy being wrong so much that we will cling to being wrong in the face of facts. And I'm not just talking about Glenn Beck. I'm not talking about just the people listening to him.
Right.
I'm as guilty of it as anybody else. It's just that I'm aware and I try to fight it all the time.
This is a great example. The science has come out pretty clearly on something. The gluten sensitivity issue out there that people are, you know, I'm gluten intolerant or whatever.
Right.
When double-blind studies...
That sounds like a personal problem.
Right. It absolutely is, actually. When double-blind studies are done on people that believe that they are gluten intolerant, and they follow this up over a period of weeks, they do the testing, they're taking journals, they're looking at actual responses, there's only about 1% of the people that think that they're gluten intolerant that are really gluten intolerant. Okay,
right.
So that's not surprising. Here's the surprising part. About 80% of that group don't believe the science. Even after they've been told, no, look, this that you ate here on this day and didn't respond to, and on this day and didn't respond to, that had gluten in it. They have put so much sacrifice into avoiding gluten, that they cannot let the effort that they put into not having gluten be wrong, so the science is wrong.
And then the same thing is true if you ever read anything about anti-GMO, anti-genetic modification.
Right.
Almost inevitably, something comes up about wheat and gluten intolerance.
Right.
And this is one of the strangest things. When I've talked to people about this, I said, are you aware of the fact that there are no genetically modified wheat strains? And the answer is almost always, well, that's beside the point. I said, wait a minute, your whole argument is that all this gluten intolerance and all these things are caused by wheat that has been genetically modified. But there are no genetically modified wheat strains.
They're all genetically modified, you're saying?
They're not.
All wheat.
No,
not.
None of them are. There are no such thing. There's no such thing as a genetically modified wheat strain.
There is. It's just not grown commercially.
Well, I mean,
it's in a lab somewhere.
It's not. There's no food in our system that has. There's no wheat product in our system that has genetically modified. It's not
commercially available.
Because it just, as far as consumption is concerned, it doesn't exist. But the main argument, and but if I present people that information, do they modify their position? No.
So when you make sacrifices based on a strong belief, it makes the belief stronger. And that's part of the psychology that goes into all of the books that have been written there. There's on the institutional level, when you make sacrifices for an institution, the institution becomes more than the idea on which it was founded. When you go ahead.
Yeah, gluten intolerance is the same way. Since in the food business, most people think it's a diet, and it's not.
Right.
But they follow it.
And right.
I mean, all the information I've read about food and diet is just incredibly
distorted.
What people follow, and it's just incredible how they follow it.
Yeah, there's something called celiac disease, which is a real issue. It is a real gluten issue. And a lot of people have jumped onto that. There's also something that a fairly decent set of studies have been done with people that have autism. When they remove casein and gluten from the diet, some of the people with autism actually have significant improvement. So there's study behind this stuff. But that gluten intolerance that the whole population suddenly has developed.
Wait a minute, removing casein? We got casein in there?
Casein is a form of milk. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's
whey protein. Yeah. I was reading the
I just
book
had to make
the Structure
clear.
And Economic Change, and it's pretty interesting. I mean, I just started it,
uh-huh.
So I just got into the first couple of chapters.
Good luck.
But it's going to be a while.
I know. So I have to reread quite a bit of it. I'm like, what are you talking about? But he does make a good point of basically, I think one of the points that was interesting is saying, in order to stop cost of going up of like enforcing law, that you need a set of morals to basically, well, people won't do it anymore without having to enforce it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So it, all laws should represent the ethics of the culture. And if you think about our laws on immigration, our law says no immigration without a green card. But the actions of the people is we go to restaurants that have cooks in the back that don't have green cards. We go to restaurants.
And we get our lawns mowed by.
We get our lawns mowed. We get our houses built. We go to hotels that are cleaned by. We give money to something that we disagree with, and we do it regularly. So this is, again, that thing about being wrong. But because there's one layer of difference between us, and then I think if people are truly against immigration as an illegal event. Stop buying fruit and vegetables. Stop going to restaurants and make sure that everybody that built your house was legal.
And
people won't do that.
One of the great ironies when people talk about violation of the law is the reason that they're against having a lot of Hispanic people in the United States. It is actually only a civil offense to cross the border without authorization.
Right.
It's a minor civil offense, by the way.
It's not even ticketable.
But it is actually a criminal offense to hire them.
Right. And people are hiring them regularly.
Yes.
And these are not the immigrants that are hiring them. It's the people that already are here. It's citizens.
And they wouldn't come if we didn't hire them.
Well, culturally, I mean, I think it's hard for all of us because we know where we come from. That we come from all that. We come from people just wanting to flee the economic. They want more economic, ability to go do things, anything else, and we know that's where we come from. And no matter where it is, China from the West Coast, from the Irish to the Italian on the East Coast, from the South, it's the Mexican population or whatever. It's we without it, we just don't become a great country as we are because we don't have people coming over wanting to work hard.
I think what you're saying is that we're giving more incentive than we are giving detriment.
Yes.
Yeah. I see nothing wrong with the population coming over and working hard. For population, okay, look, if you're going to come over and work hard, that's fine. We just got to know who you are.
Well,
you just can't do it. You just can't
come
over
and
find
out
who you are.
What we need is just like on the tax issue we talked about last hour. We need a complete rational overhaul of the tax code.
Yeah.
We need a complete rational overhaul of the immigration laws.
I think
however,
you're talking oxymorons because you said rational and then you're implying Congress in the middle of that.
But we are right now composed, our nation is right now composed of two basic, very, very, very committed groups of people to their ideology that enjoy being wrong so much that they are willing to fight for it.
Now, having said all of that, having said, talked about the economics of immigration, I do see something wrong with hiring illegal immigrants.
So do I.
That is that it's illegal. We have a law.
Right.
Now, we either need to change the law, which I think is obvious. If you have a law that the vast majority of your citizens are violating by buying substances, I mean, if you think about if you buy stolen property, that is a violation of the law. If you buy goods that were obtained illegally, that's a violation of the law. And most of the vegetables that we eat, most of the fruit that we eat, most of the food that we eat at restaurants, most of the hotels that we stay at, the services were obtained through violating the law. So we as the citizens of this country are breaking the law, which means that the law is wrong, one, but it also puts us in that gray, well, black, nasty area of being violators ourselves.
Let's get into a very real area right here. The Obama administration has been much more vigorously attempting to enforce the anti-marijuana laws in the United States than previous administrations. But this is the first president of the United States who openly admits smoking marijuana himself.
Well, George W. Bush admitted it as well.
Well, I mean, this one openly admits, and he has no reticence about saying when he was in college he smoked marijuana.
Right.
Therefore, he's going to enforce the heck out of the anti-marijuana laws. And
just
meanwhile, the states are...
So why is this wrong? It's politicians.
But I'm just saying, this is an example of what goes on. And it's called cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
And it drives me nuts.
The ability to hold two completely opposing ideas in your mind at the same time comfortably.
And because of the nature of my brain, it is critically uncomfortable for me to do that. Well, thanks for calling, Chris.
Yes.
We actually have
appreciate it.
Some other
see you later.
Stuff. Thanks. Okay. Have fun in Memphis. He's all the way in Egypt.
No, he's not. That's where he's from.
I thought he said he was calling from Memphis.
Via. He said he's from Georgetown via Memphis. So he was in Memphis.
Was that anything like Viva?
No, that's Las Vegas.
Oh, okay. Got it. Okay. Well, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we haven't talked about what the market did very much. I do want to say something about it.
What?
Well, during the last week, and again, this show is being broadcast on Saturday, August the 2th, 2014, the Dow Jones Industrial Average declined 2.75%, and that's pretty significant. And even 1 year return of the Dow right now is 5.33%, which is a lot lower than people like to think about. The S&P 500 is still up for the year, but year to date, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 0.5%. Now, what does this mean? A 2.75% drop during the week is not anything particularly earth-shaking. However, we've been saying for some time, we are overdue for a correction. And corrections are weird things. They don't mean anything other than there will be a stampede in some particular direction until it reaches the point of total irrationality and people start to step back in and recognize that there's no reason for this. They typically, every summer we get one. Jake and I have discussed this in previous summers, mainly because the big traders go out of town on
vacation.
On vacation. And that was really weird. I just got a notification that I got an email from you and you're sitting right across.
Yeah, I sent you an email.
Oh, okay. But the point is that we're probably coming up on one of those corrections now, and that's probably important to know. It's important to understand that at the same time we're seeing the stock market do a correction, we're getting very strong signals from the general economy that it is healthier than it's been since 2007. For example, the employment situation that's going on in the United States right now, when you net it all out and very carefully look at it, is the growth in employment recently is the best since 1997. And you start down the list of best since, and the situations that we're seeing in the economy is extreme health, which of course means that there are going to be some people on Wall Street who panic, and which there's actually a weird and peculiar logic to it, they're going to turn around and try to sell to avoid loss. And it's one of those things where, for whatever it's worth, any time a long-term investment decision is made with the intention of avoiding short-term loss, you're not really a long-term investor. You're doing something that's foolish. But that doesn't keep a lot of people on Wall Street from being foolish. But that's an important thing. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 2.75% this week. The S&P 500 down 2.69%. The NASDAQ was down 2.18%, which is sort of an interesting comparison because typically the NASDAQ drops further, faster than do the others. But what we're, again, we could easily see,
I think, total
sometime between now and October, I would be frankly be surprised if we did not see a correction.
Yeah, we're down from the peak, which was just a couple of weeks back. About on the Dow, it was about 17,138. Mm-hmm. We're down just over 600 points from there, which is about not quite 4% down.
Mm-hmm.
It's conceivable that we'll have another 6 percentage point drop.
10-12% drop is would be normal at this point.
You know, this week that it's happening is the week that all this good news comes out about employment and all the good news that comes out about GDP growth and about consumer spending and about manufacturing growth. All of these things have been coming out. And
you know, there's a name for that now.
What is that?
When the market declines on good economic news, it's called a taper tantrum.
A taper tantrum. Yeah, we're upset because the Fed is also seeing all the good news and is likely to raise interest rates at some point.
At some point in the distant future, they're going to raise interest rates.
No, don't do it. Yes, so everything's looking so good. Oh, no, that's horrible.
but we do need to mention that we're going to get a correction at some point, I think, and say with about 99% confidence because we do this. And the most likely time to get a correction in the market is during the summer when the big decision makers are on vacation and they've got the second string in there whose job is to avoid losing money while the big guys are gone. And we do this every year, except this particular year.
It's a little later in the year.
We're running. And it's very much like the fact that if you open the door this morning and you noticed it was cooler outside than inside, and you went and checked the calendar, and it is indeed August, and you checked your location and found out you're in Central Texas, and you went, that's what we say when these things happen. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and the telephone numbers in here are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we have some commercials to play, so that Town Square and KTEM can be financially supported, and we'll be back on the other side of these critically important words from our sponsors. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and Jake McClure. And because this is in the middle of the second hour, we don't fill up the wall with English Dead, which gets stinky after a bit.
After a couple of days in the Texas sun,
Harfleur. Yes.
French sun.
The French sun, which is different. If it's something stinks in French, it's the English Dead that have filled up the wall.
Unless you're in Denmark, and then that's a different play. Something rotting in the state of Denmark.
Rotten in the state of Denmark.
It's a different play.
What do you think was rotten in the state of Denmark?
Probably fish.
I was thinking perhaps cheese, but fish could be it.
Could be fish.
Fish. Something was rotten in the state of Denmark. And we've been if you think about the fact, you know, 400 or 500 years of trying to determine what was rotten in the state of Denmark. And Denmark is still there. Anyway,
Well, I want to talk. I mentioned it just in passing.
You want to talk?
No, I'll stop talking.
Okay.
No, I'll talk some more now. Yes, we should do an hour of silence just in to see it. But you could. There was a band that put out an album, and in the album they had a song that was just silent. And the idea was that
it was called The Sound of Silence?
Yeah, that's actually what it was called.
Okay.
And you put that song on repeat while you were sleeping and listen to their Song of Silence the whole night. I think that's a brilliant move.
Yeah, but you can only do it once. It's not like you can do a cover on that.
Well, you can do a cover. It's like, we're going to do a cover.
Even I can do a cover on that one.
I think I'm going to do it at least as well as the original song, which is kind of hard to do as a cover. But anyway, the Manufacturing ISM Report.
Ooh.
Ooh, so exciting. This is a report. We talk about it.
ISM.
Yeah, regularly. About once a month we talk about it, which is about when it comes out.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And basically what it does is it measures growth in 18 different manufacturing sectors. And basically it averages them together. And a report that says 50 means that we are not going down and not going up. No shrinkage, no growth. This month, we got a 58.9.
Whoa.
Which is a major growth rate. We're talking about, 57.1. 58.9 reading in June. We're talking, and in New Orleans, they had a 63.4. We're getting growth at a significant rate across the manufacturing index. There are 17 out of 18 growth areas. The one area that isn't growing of those 18 is wood products, by which we mean lumber. Because actually, furniture and related products are having significant growth, so it's just lumber that's left. What does
lumber
that mean?
Lumber that's left.
Lumber is not advancing with the rest of the manufacturing.
So the lumber is not moving to lumbering.
And that has a lot to do with the diseases and wildfires that are going on out there.
Also, with the fact we're not building a lot of new houses.
Right. There's the manufacturing of houses, not so big.
Lumber is lumbering.
Right. Lumbering along slowly.
Which it does.
Yeah. So when we look at that manufacturing growth, this is the 14th consecutive month of growth in the manufacturing industry.
But I want you to remember this issue of lumber is lumbering, because when he gets done, I want to say something about it.
Now, as far as the overall economy goes, from the perspective of the manufacturing world, the consuming side of it, this isn't GDP growth. This is from the perspective of consumer and manufacturing. This is the 64th month of consecutive growth.
You know, you could qualify as a geek.
Yeah. What that means is that we've had more than 5 years where every month, one after another, we've had growth. That's pretty amazing.
But don't you know the economy's going to collapse?
It will eventually.
Oh, okay.
It may be a long ways out. It may be a long, long ways out. But right now, we're in good shape.
I think we should worry about that right along with the fact that in about 8 billion years, the Andromeda galaxy will slam into ours.
Well, I think the sun will have already decayed at that point.
Really got something to worry about.
Right.
See?
I mean, at the end.
That's only like about 6 or 7 billion years.
What we're talking about is the end of the world. The
literally,
end of the world.
Right.
Yeah. Which probably. This is something I tell children often, and something that we are always standing.
And you're telling it to me. Got you. Okay.
We're always standing on the end of the world.
Yes. It's just which end?
Well, and in this case, all you have to do is jump straight up, and you have jumped off the edge of the world.
Right.
Of course, you get pulled right back down to it, but you have stepped off the edge of the world when you do that every time you do it.
Okay.
And that seems to be the worry that people have about the economy, that something bad has happened in the past, therefore it's happening now.
No, it's going to happen.
It's going to happen. Well, when we look at the stock market as it's dropping.
Right.
And it has dropped. It is a significant drop if you consider that we haven't really had any kind of drop in a long time. People are scared because of all the good news, which to me means that we are really still in a bull market.
Exactly.
Bull markets climb a wall of worry. This week we have had good news after good news after good news after good news, and the market dropped. I'm happy about that. I am more happy than I can tell you. If the market had jumped up during this week, I would have been worried.
Hmm.
Because it's in the middle of summer and we had a lot of good news. What that usually means for the summer traders, as you were saying, is the other shoe's about to drop. Quick, hide. And that's what's happening, and that makes me happy.
Well, that's what I was going to talk about.
Lumbering.
Pro-cyclicality, actually, is the way it's pronounced. Pro-cyclicality and structural trends.
Okay, what are you taking medication for that?
No.
Is that something?
But we need
like,
some, I think. And one of the things that came out about the concerns about this going to turn into a correction is a fellow at Raymond James, the chief chief investment strategist at Raymond James, says the telephone calls he's getting from their, quote, financial advisors, which means security salesmen, are running 10 to 1 in favor of what should I be buying. Only 1 out of 10 is saying, what should I be selling right now? And he says that always makes me nervous when that happens. And in the...
Well, I've got a statement for that. You know, that 5 out of 6 Russians prefer Russian roulette.
I'm going to have to worry. I'm going to have to think about that for a while. Okay. Pro-cyclicality is something that is really, really powerful. And what it boils down to is whatever in a group of people, whatever in a group appears to be attractive will be rendered far more attractive by the fact that there's a lot of people being attracted to it. And it, and we have it's called herd instinct.
Unless it's magnets.
It even works with magnets.
Oh, okay. The law of attraction. It's there everywhere.
Because all those little atoms are lined up exactly the same way. That's what makes it a magnet.
Right.
Okay?
When it comes to the attractiveness in a crowd, though, it's only as attractive as it is until people stop finding it attractive.
And then they turn and run in the other direction just as fast.
Right.
So
polarity shift.
And he was talking about lumber. And one of the things I want to bring back to our collective memory is that in the 2000-2002 up until a few years later time frame, when the stock markets were declining rather dramatically, it was about a 50% plus decline in the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index from 2000 through about August of 2002. And the managers of the Harvard and Yale endowments were considered to be somewhat of superheroes.
Brilliant people.
Because they found a way to avoid going down with the market. And they did that, by the way, largely. And they did some other things, too. But the centerpiece of what they were doing is they were investing in timber-producing properties. A lot of them in East Texas, I might add.
Very, very, very large swaths of it.
Which they were valuing based on the lumber coming off of the property and the profitability of these big chunks of land with lumber growing on it. And they were considered to be genius. And that was, by the way, the origin of what are called alternative investments.
Right.
And if you follow those alternative investments forward to today, you'll find out that in many cases they're still owned by the same investment fund. Harvard still owns...
Because they can't sell them.
Right, great swaths of timber that they are paying a lot of money to upkeep and getting nothing out of while lumber is lumbering.
A lot of the lumber in this sector has died of different diseases fungus.
But the big thing is it's not worth what they paid for it. And they are not willing at present, and have not been for some time, to realize their losses. This is a lesson in investing. And
it's a tough lesson if you are at the Harvard Foundation, but you know, for the rest of us, it's a nice lesson. We can look at them and say,
Well, it's also found in if you go in to see your guy from Merrill Lynch or Edward Jones or whatever, and he wants you to get into some ETF of something that doesn't sound particularly friendly, but it sounds really interesting. And, for instance, bank loan ETFs. There was an article in Barron's, and I've been asked on several occasions, why don't we use more ETFs in our portfolios? And the reason is, at the size they're at right now, they've not been tested, and B, the underlying what's called ecology that makes them work is so incredibly complex, I'm not sure anybody really understands it. As a result, in a sudden downturn, exotic ETFs, things that are not very, very, very widely traded, have the potential to create the equivalent of a 1987 market collapse.
Flash crash style.
And those things really bear watching and avoiding. And just wanted, Barron's has an extensive series of articles about the dangers of ETFs right now.
Oh, that's like they've been listening to our program.
Yeah, and I just wanted to bring that up again. If you wind up with somebody saying you should get a bunch of ETFs, and now we've got, man, we got these new ETFs. And new, by the way, in the investment world, new is scary. And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, this week we had a country in South America declare bankruptcy, I guess, for a second time. And
well,
now they didn't know.
No.
There was an article about credit default swaps took a big hit because of that. What exactly are those? How do those work?
Okay.
Thanks, Colin.
Yeah, let's say Argentina was declared in default. They didn't declare bankruptcy.
It was default of Argentina.
Yeah, default of Argentina. What happened
or
is
the default of the hedge funds, depending on who's.
Yeah, if you haven't been following this, Argentina a few years back, probably I guess 4 years back now, they made a big deal. We covered it on the program. They made a big deal of talking to their bondholders, the national debt of Argentina, and saying, we can't pay it, and if we default, you don't get anything. But if we make an arrangement with you, we'll pay you 60 cents on the dollar. We'll give you 60% of what you're owed.
Mm-hmm.
And
ancient tradition.
Right. A large number of the bondholders said, okay, good. A very small number of them said, no, you said in a contract that you would pay me, and I'm not going to accept anything but what you said. You promised me you would pay me.
And in many cases, these bonds, by the way, are denominated in dollars.
Well, not just in many cases. In all cases, they're denominated in dollars because Argentina went through the New York financial system to put out its national debt. It went to New York, and in going to New York, it said it would follow the rules of our financial system in how it dealt with its bonds and its bondholders. So since then, two major hedge funds have gone and bought up the people that didn't agree to this 60 cents on the dollar thing. They bought up the bonds for that.
Right.
And then they took Argentina to court in the United States, because that's the financial system that's being used. And the court said, you signed a contract that said you would pay this dollar amount, this debt. You said you would do it. You either do it or you can't use the U.S. financial markets anymore, which to Argentina means that if they can't use the financial markets of the United States, the British system is the only other system,
and
they're not going to do it either.
Well, not only that, but remember, Argentina invaded.
Right. We're talking about, they're still talking about re-invading
Falcons.
I'm sorry. I just keep wanting to say
the Maldivas.
Yeah. The Falcon Islands, which they want to hold a national referendum to vote on whether or not the Falcon Islands are part of Argentina. The problem is that the people that live on the Falcon Islands have already voted, and they've said it again and again. They're British. They want to remain British. So the Argentinians went to the U.S. financial system to release their debt. They don't have any other options. The U.S. court said, you've got to pay the debt as it stands. Argentina bought credit default swaps. What that is basically it's like the same kind of insurance that you have on a mortgage if you haven't put down 20%. In the event of your failure, the insurance is supposed to step in and pay some of that money back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the credit default...
Actually, on the insurance, it pays it all back.
Right.
On mortgages.
In the credit default swap, it's just some.
Yeah.
So these insurance companies are going, well, we didn't expect a complete failure of the Argentinian system. So
we may not be able to actually pay these off.
Right. So Argentina has been saying, we have not defaulted. We're not defaulting. Even though all the credit reporting agencies, basically if you were getting your credit report done, you would go to three major agencies.
These guys missed a payment.
These bond reporters are S&P and Moody's, Fitch, those guys. They said, all right, they missed the full payment. They've been missing the full payment since 2010, which means because of the court ruling, they are automatically in default. If you think back to the Greeks, when the Greeks are saying, we're not going to pay 100% of what we owe, well, that means you're in default. That means you have not paid your debt. So the Argentinians are saying, no, wait, we paid it. We paid it at 60 cents on the dollar. Well, try saying that to the electric company sometime. Well, I paid my bill. Well, no, you didn't. You paid 60% of it, and you've been paying 60% now for 4 years. That's turn off the electricity time. Well, the Argentinians are very upset about this. They're doing a big propaganda thing, and they've got the American flag posted on billboards with vultures in front of it, saying it's the Americans that are causing the Argentinian people to suffer. When, from the perspective of the court and the perspective of the people that have loaned money to Argentina, they're saying, wait, you promised me that you would pay me, and now it's my fault that you can't pay me. What?
No, it's my fault that you don't want to pay me.
Right. Wait a minute. Let me figure that one out again. So Argentina is in a spot. The credit default swap insurance companies that were involved in this area are also in a spot. Argentina has the assets to pay the debt. However, if they pay the debt, they cannot do a lot of the other things that they were going to do with the money, like social insurance and roads and that sort of thing.
Invade the Falkland Islands again.
Right. And that's really seriously what they were spending a lot of the money on, was increasing their navy so that they could go and invade the Falkland Islands, which has a lot of natural resources in the water around it. So, I mean, we've got a problem in Argentina. Well, I should say that the Argentinians have a problem in Argentina.
Yeah.
And two major hedge funds, they thought by buying this stuff up that the court would rule on a structured payment plan and cause the Argentinians to pay in a structured settlement just to the hedge funds. However, the court ruled that Argentina owed it to all of the bondholders.
Yep.
Which is not what the hedge funds wanted either. The hedge funds said, whoa, wait a minute. We just want ours. Those guys agreed to a separate deal. We didn't. If you make them pay everybody, they're not going to be able to pay us. Well, too bad.
That's called the law of unintended consequences.
Right. You shouldn't have taken them to court on the law that you were taking them to court on if you didn't want it to fall the way it fell.
This tells you from a bigger perspective what's going on in Argentina. First off, it's pretty traditional. Governments historically have borrowed in someone else's currency. And then
just don't pay it.
And then don't pay it. And when they don't pay it, they generally get hit between the eyes with the equivalent of a sledgehammer.
Right.
And they suffer for a while. Now, immediately, a person could raise the issue, well, the United States owes all this money. But this is the point. The United States is in a beautiful position in the world. It owes money denominated in dollars, and it has total control of the dollars.
Right.
So
if you want to use our system, you've got to pay. You got to follow our rules.
Right. And very frankly, several economists have written some very good works that we could never go the way of Greece or Spain,
right,
or any of the other nations in the European Union. And the reason is they're minor players in a big currency that somebody else controls.
Yeah.
We are major players in a currency that we control. Do I think it's a really good idea for us to run our debts up really high?
No.
But the fear that something will happen to us like is happening to Argentina or Greece or Italy is pretty irrational at this point. Now, yeah. One of the things that you're going to hear in the news in the near future, by the way.
Oh, you're making a prediction.
I am. With the increases in employment that we're seeing,
yeah,
and the increases in profitability, some 60-some percent, 68% or something, of the S&P 500 are reporting earnings significantly higher than estimates.
Right.
We're going to see by this time next year a dramatic reduction in the U.S. deficit. We're going to see the national debt actually start in inflation-adjusted dollars to come down. This is the thing people have been afraid of, and the issue is
of us not being there,
of us not doing that, and so
I think they've also been afraid
of. This is a prediction.
Yeah,
you're going to see the deficit fall below the growth in GDP. Now, what does that mean? That sounds like a bunch of gobbledygook.
It is a bunch of gobbledygook.
When the growth in the total debt of the government reduces to a position where it is less than the percentage of the gross domestic product. In other words, if let's say our debt is increasing at 1% and our GDP is increasing at 2.2, in reality, our total debt is shrinking, and that's coming probably within the next year.
It's really our debt to income ratio is going down, is what we're saying.
And it's going to be an interesting thing if this pops up a little later in the year at the end of the government's fiscal year. The government's fiscal year ends on October 1st, or actually the end
begins,
of September.
Begins October 1st, yeah.
So in October, get ready for a surprise. And the surprise is deficits will have dropped dramatically. The all kinds of good economic news will pop up. It has nothing to do, contrary to belief, with the fact that there's elections in November.
It doesn't have anything to do with what administration is in power or any of that stuff.
But
go ahead. They'll take credit for it anyway.
But anybody who says that something is wrong and some nasty thing is going on at that point. By the way, we're looking for right now towards being in optimal economic condition around 2016.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, for those who would really like to see a different party control the White House, is not particularly good news.
No, because they'll end up the year with a lot of popularity because the economy is going well.
I wanted to throw one other thing. You want to worry about something over the long term, and one of the reasons I think that we need to have a complete reform of the immigration laws is we are encountering labor shortages in the United States right now at the lower end of the economic scale.
Which is why we have the influx of illegal immigration that we have right now.
And we sincerely need the people who are coming across the border illicitly. I know that sounds really strange. If the law is being widely violated and our economy is dependent upon widely violating the law, then we probably need to change the law. It's kind of like the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. Sounded like a pretty good idea when it was passed in that it would save gasoline. It didn't. But we really need immigration reform to allow more low-income workers, low-skilled workers, and I know that sounds really backwards and upside down and inverted, into the United States. Among other things, they have a lot of children when they come into the United States, and they pay into Social Security, and they pay into Medicare, which will keep the rest of us going very nicely into the future.
Yeah, we need to keep a growing population, and without immigration, we have a shrinking population, which means that if you have Social Security and you think you want to keep it, then you need to get immigration reform.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're not going to get Social Security at some point. If you have Medicare, you're not going to get it at some point. We need a growing population, and the native citizens, and by that I mean they were born here, not that their ancestors were, the population of people that were born here only is shrinking.
All right, we're down to 2 minutes.
Yeah. So anyway, we do need immigration reform. And if you look at all of our ancestors, unless you're Native American.
Well, even they immigrated.
Even they immigrated. And that is absolutely true. There's nobody that's been here for more than about 10,000 years.
Probably did not have passports when they came across the Bering Straits.
I think that we should go back and issue tariffs on all the way back.
Unless you can prove that your ancestors have been here forever. Okay. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we do have the ability to communicate with us this weekend through a voicemail system and also live people during the week. If you'd like to give us a call either during the week or this weekend, locally, our telephone number is an easy one to remember. It's 947 because it's in Salado. All the Salado's numbers are 947. And the last four digits of the number I set up so that I could remember them, and it's 1111. So it's 947-1111. And otherwise, you can call.
Toll-free 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. Also easy to remember. You can contact us by email. These are more difficult. Jeff at tpwc.com, as in thepersonalwealthcoach.com, or Jake at tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, tpwc.com. You can look at our ugly mugs and the wonderful people that we work with. You can see how we do business and all that great stuff. You can also listen to podcasts in case your insanity level isn't quite reached for the week. You can listen to more. So until next week, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
Your Fox News station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.